Tonight is December the 6th. We are continuing in creation. We are on page 242.
242.
And we're up to Pasuk Tez Zayin, verse 16. No, Tez Vav, verse 15. Top of the page.
Tez Vav.
We last left the brothers having finally convinced Yaakov that they should take Binyamin, and he sent Binyamin down with them with a gift for Yosef, along with the money that he had returned, and also double the amount of money to buy whatever they needed to buy, plus a prayer. And now they have come down to Egypt for the second time, and here the drama is going to unfold. So, the pasuk begins, verse 15, Tezvav. Tezvav. Vayikru anashim es hamincha hazos, and the men took this gift. Umishna kesav lakru v'yadam, and double the amount of money they took in their hands. Ve'es binyamin, and they also took binyamin. Vayakumu vayardu mitzrayim, and they got up, and they went down to Egypt. Vayamdu lifne Yosef, and they stood before Yosef. Now, even though it says they stood before Yosef, it does not mean they were actually standing there in the room in front of Yosef, but they were in a place where Yosef could see them. They were in the area of Yosef's place. Vaya Yosef itames Binyamin. Yosef saw with them Binyamin. Vayomer la'asha beiso, and he said to the one in charge of his house, Haveyas ha'anashim ha'baisa, bring the men to the home, to the house. Utvo'ach Tevach v'hachain, and they translate it as have the meat slaughtered and prepare it. Ki iti ochlu ha'anashim batzaharayim, for with me the men will dine, will eat. Batzaharayim means at noon, so they'll have lunch with me. So you should slaughter the animal and prepare it, for the men are going to eat with me at noon. Vayas ha'ish kasher va'Yosef, the man did as Yosef said. Vayaveh ha'ish esha anashim beisa Yosef, and the man brought the men to the house of Yosef. This was a very unusual thing to be brought to the house of Yosef. Those who came to buy food typically came. There was some kind of a store or some kind of an area where a warehouse where the food was being sold. To be brought to Yosef's personal quarters was unusual. Vayir'u ha'anashim, and the men were afraid. Ki huv'u beis Yosef, for they were brought to the house of Yosef. It was so unusual, they were concerned that this was a way of capturing them. Vayomru, and they said, al devar ha'kesef, this is because of the money, hashav ba'am techosenu ba'techila, that was returned in our saddlebags initially. Anachnu muvayim, we are being brought. It's because of that money that we're being brought to Yosef's house. Lihiskolel aleinu ulhisnapel aleinu. So I'm going to read the English here. So that a charge can be fabricated against us, that it crashed down on us. Two words which are meant to emphasize the same idea, that there'll be a charge brought against us, and that it be crashed down upon us. Velakachas osanu la'avadim veschamoreinu, that we be taken as slaves, along with our donkeys. So the fear here is that they are now going to be framed, and then they will be taken as slaves along with their donkeys. We've already shown the point about donkeys. Who remembers why they're concerned about their donkeys more than about anything else?
Because
what? What?
Because of what the donkeys could carry, it represented wealth.
Well, not just wealth.
Well, they'll be able to get home again.
They won't be able to bring the food home. Even if they could get home, but they couldn't bring their food home. Right. And then the families would starve. So they need the donkeys as much as they need themselves, they need their donkeys. Vayigishu el ha'ish asha beis Yosef. And they approached the man that was in charge of the house of Yosef. Vayidabru elav pesach habayis. And they spoke to him at the opening of the house. So they haven't actually entered into the house yet. They are just outside and they're speaking to him. Vayomru, and they said, Bi Adoni, please my master. If you please, my Lord, is the way they say it on the English side. Okay. We went down initially to purchase food. That was our initial reason to come down. Last time when we came down, we only came down with the intent of buying food. And it was when we came to the inn, we opened our bags, and behold, the money of each man was in the mouth of his bag. Our money in its weight, meaning exactly what we had brought down to pay for the food. Vanashev, meaning it wasn't a different amount of money, it was exactly what we had brought down initially. Vanashev oso biyadenu, we have returned it in our hands. Vechesef acher horadnu biyadenu lishmar ochel, we brought additional money with us to buy food. We're not going to pay for the food now with the money that we brought back. That we're going to give you. Plus, we brought that extra money to buy food with. Lo yadanu misam kaspinu v'yabtocho, say no, we don't know who put our money into our bags. It wasn't us. We weren't trying to steal. We weren't trying to rip you off. We don't know what happened. Vayomer, he said, Shalom lachem, peace to you. Al tira'u, don't be afraid. Elokeichem, your God, ve'lokei avichem, the God of your father, nasan lachem matmon b'amtecho seichem, has put a hidden treasure in your bags. Tasbechem bo'eloi, your payment had reached me. I got your money. Meaning, I don't know how you got this money. I got your money. This is some gift from your God. Vayotzei alehem es Shimon, and he brought out to them Shimon. So he took Shimon out of jail and presented them with Shimon. Vayaveho isha sa'anashim beisa Yosef, and the man brought the men to the house of Yosef. Vayiten mayim, he gave water. Vayirchatsu ragwehem, and they washed their feet, which was the common thing to do. You walked in the sand, your feet needed to be washed, and it was not just for cleanliness, it was also for comfort. Vayitain mispola chamorehem, and he gave feed for their donkeys. Vayachinu es hamincha, they prepared the gift, which means they adorned it. They had brought the gift down, but the gift wasn't in a gift basket yet. It was brought down in a way that would protect it from the road as they were traveling. But now that they were there, they adorned it. They put it into nice baskets and nice wrapping and all that. So they prepared the gift. And bo Yosef bat Zaharayim, before Yosef came at noontime, ki shamu, for they heard, ki sham yochlu lachem, that there they would eat bread. Vayavo Yosef habaisa, and Yosef came to the house. Vayavi ulo es hamincha asher biyadam, and he brought to him the gift that was in their hands, habaisa, to the house. Vayishtachav ulo artsa, they bowed down to him to the ground. Now, this is crucial, because who are they bowing with?
Binyamin
is also there and bowing down. So this is actually the fulfillment of the first dream. The first dream was almost fulfilled last time when they all bowed down to Yosef, but Binyamin wasn't there. Now Binyamin bows along with them, bows to Yosef. The first dream has been fulfilled. Vayishalohem l'shalom, he asked them to peace. Vayomer, he said, Hashalom avichem azakin asher amartem, is there peace to your father, your elderly father that you mentioned? Ha'udenu chay, is he still alive? Vayomru, they said, Shalom le'abdecho le'avinu, peace to your servant, our father. Odenu chay, he's still alive. Vayikidu vayishtachavu, again, they went down on the knees and they bowed. Vayisa inav, and he lifted up his eyes. Yosef lifted up his eyes. Vayar es binyamin achiv ben imo, he saw binyamin, his brother, the son of his mother, his full brother, not a half brother, but a full brother. Now remember, he had seen binyamin before, but only from a distance. Now he's actually face to face with everybody, and he sees binyamin fully. Vayomer, he said, Hazach ichem akatona asher amartem eloi, is this your young brother that you mentioned to me? Vayomar, that was a rhetorical question. Vayomar, and he said, Elokim yachmecha bini, God should be gracious to you, my son. Let's read one more pasuk. Vayemaher Yosef, Yosef went quickly, ki nichmeru rachamav elochiv, for his mercy was stirred to his brother. His compassion for his brother had been stirred, they say. Vayavakesh lifkos, he needed to cry. Vayavo hachadra, he came to the room. Vayef shama, and he cried there. We'll read one more. Vayechatz panav vayetze. He washed his face and he came out. Vayisapak, and he withheld himself. Vayom, and he said, simu lachem, place bread. So Yosef is clearly very emotional over here. He sees his brother. He wants to embrace his brother, perhaps his brothers, but he's holding himself back. He's not ready because he still has a plan. Even though the first dream has been fulfilled, the brothers, including Binyamin, have bowed to him, but Yosef is not ready to reveal who he is because he still has a plan.
Which dream is this fulfilled? The one with the wheat or the one with the sun and the moon?
The one with the wheat. Because with the one with the wheat, remember, it was their wheat bowing to his wheat, which means that he wasn't revealed yet. The second dream is the sun, the moon, and 11 stars bowing to him, knowing who he is.
Okay.
But the first dream, they don't know who he is when they bow to him. So that's the case right now. They don't know who he is, and they've bowed to him. So that's fine. The dream has come true. And remember, that was part of what was motivating him, was to make the dream come true. But there's another motivation, which is going on at the same time, which is his plan, which is not yet fulfilled. And we will see it unfold as we go. Yeah?
The brothers ever bowed to an Egyptian deity before?
He's not a deity. He's a king. I don't know if they have or haven't, but they can.
Oh, if we're allowed to?
You can bow to a person.
But if that person can't be God?
No.
Because Pharaoh did.
Right. That's why they didn't bow to Pharaoh. But you can, we'll see later about Pharaoh himself, but you can bow to a person, that's permitted. Jewish kings, we bow to Jewish kings. That's permitted.
And Gentile kings?
Also, one can bow, as long as it's not construed as avodah zarah, as worshipping. Right, right. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam she'hakol nehiyeh
b'varach.
Amen. Is it a bow from the waist, or is it actually...
No, they went down to the ground. They went down to the ground. Let's turn back now to where we started, on 242. Top of the page, Pasuk Tezvav, verse 15. So the brothers have come down with Binyamin. And they stand before Yosef, meaning they're in his general vicinity. In Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16, we have the first mention of something that gets mentioned in the few psukim, the few verses we just read. This gets mentioned no fewer than 8 times. Let's read that pasuk again, Tezayin 16. You tell me which word in this pasuk will be mentioned no fewer than 8 times in the ensuing psukim, and that has not been mentioned until now.
The man, Binyamin.
Vayar Yosef itam es Binyamin. Yosef saw with them Binyamin, so Binyamin has been mentioned before. Vayomer la'asher abeiso, he said to the one in charge of his house, bring the men to the house, and slaughter the meat and prepare it. For with me, the men will eat at noon. Okay, men has been mentioned, although not as much as it's mentioned here.
His house.
The house of Yosef. The house of Yosef is going to be mentioned now over and over and over again. There's the man in charge of Yosef's house, but then the psukim seem to revolve around they were coming to his house, they were afraid because they were coming to his house, they talked to him at the doorway to his house, he reassured them, so he brought them into the house, they waited for Yosef because he heard he was coming to the house. Over and over and over again, Yosef's house. What is the importance of Yosef's house?
He's the head. Around.
He is the head, but he's the head of all of Egypt, not just the house. What was that?
The only kosher one in town.
Okay, that's not so. Yeah. That's not so far-fetched. We're going to talk about kosher in a minute. They were about to eat meat.
All right.
Okay, so we'll discuss that momentarily.
It was his private.
That's true.
What's connected with the data being
No, but it's a huge revelation.
Now it's time.
Asking kind of questions. If you're going to die with somebody that's intimate.
Okay, it's much more intimate.
Find out some stuff.
It's for sure true to be, it's much more intimate. The reason why the typical person coming to buy food was not brought to Yosef's house is because what does he belong there? Some guy comes in to buy food, you sell him the food, he's out of it. It's a business relationship. You don't bring him to your house. Bringing to the house implies something much more serious. They were afraid, because they thought much more serious meant that they're going to be taken captive. But now, it turns out instead, it's an intimate discussion, an intimate time with Yosef. Now, throughout the Chumash, we have the term house used in several contexts, but it is only in a few places where we have the term base, house of something, like base Yisrael, house of Israel. That means all of us. We are base Yisrael. Base Yaakov, house of Yaakov. That's also a cumulative term for the Jewish people. Beis Yisrael, Beis Yaakov. What other base do we have? House of?
David.
Well, there's Beis David. Beis David we have. Okay, that's a place. I'm talking about with a person. You're right. There's Beis El, there's Beis HaMikdash, there's things like that. But I mean, Beis Din. But I'm talking about where it's a person. Beis Yisrael, Beis Yaakov, base David, right? Those people, Yaakov merited that his descendants are called base Yisrael, the house of Israel. Base Yaakov, the house of Yaakov. David HaMelech, King David, he merited that his children, his descendants are called base David, the house of David. Who else gets a base, the house of? We have it in Hallel, we have base Aaron,
right.
House of Aaron. That means that there's a special unit called Beis Aaron. Here we have, for the first time, a reference over and over again to Beis Yosef. Yosef now has a household. Yosef, I don't mean a household, an immediate family. But there is, conceptually now, there is something called Beis Yosef. This is referred to again in the Navi, where the Navi tells us, we just read it in yesterday's Haftarah, that it says, V'haya beis Yaakov Esh, the house of Yaakov will be fire, u'beis Yosef lehava, but the house of Yosef will be the flame. There's the fire and then there's the flame that makes the fire leap up. It can leap out when it has a flame. The idea of the fire, not just sitting and burning, but actually jumping shooting out. Right. That's Lehava. Ubeis Yosef, Beis Esav Lakash. And the house of Esav will be like straw. The house of Yaakov, coupled with the house of Yosef, will consume the house of Esav. It will burn the house of Esav to the ground. That's the imagery that we're meant to think about. So one can ask, what do you mean? Beis Yaakov along with Beis Yosef? Isn't Beis Yosef a subset of Beis Yaakov? It's included in Beis Yaakov. Doesn't Yaakov include all of the Jewish people, including Yosef? But we see that Beis Yosef, Yosef's house, Yosef seems to have a separate identity that has a power in and of itself, that is able to take the fire of Beis Yaakov and create a much more potent force, make that fire capable of burning down the house of Esav.
Yes. Did we learn this when Yosef was born, therefore Yaakov was able to take his sons and wives and go back?
Exactly. Rashi quotes this pasuk at that point in Parashas Vayetze, that once Yosef was born, now Yaakov felt confident and ready to leave. Until then he wasn't ready to leave because he was afraid of Esav. Without Yosef, he couldn't leave. Once he had Yosef, he could leave. Yosef here gets the distinction of base Yosef, the house of Yosef. He becomes his own. There is some entity of the house of Yosef. It's not just the individual Yosef now. Now, our descendants of Yosef, we understand easily, based David, the house of David, because his descendants are the kings. Based Aaron, we understand, because his descendants are
Kohanim.
The Kohanim. Makes sense. Based Yaakov, because his descendants are the Jews. What's based Yosef? Based Yosef is the force that can destroy Esav. That force, that subset, that his, not just him, but his descendants, have become a special entity in the embodiment of base Yosef. And that's brought up here for the first time. Mrs. Jeter, you had a question?
Yeah, no, I was just remembering the part when you had mentioned to us when Yitzchak came to see Yosef's mother, and Yosef was, though he was very young, came in front.
Correct.
And so he knew that he couldn't get close.
That's right. That's where he stood up to Esav. Exactly. That's where he first did it. That's correct. But there, he did it on his own. He wasn't yet a base Yosef. It wasn't that his descendants would be the ones to stand up, the descendants of Esav. He was there on his own standing up to Esav. Here, for the first time, he becomes his own entity, his descendants. And it is important to know that it happened here. Esav is nowhere to be found. There's no mention of Esav over here. It is Yosef and his brothers. But here, in the context of Yosef and his brothers, here, Yosef, for the first time, becomes a base Yosef, the house of Yosef. Yeah.
So, in effect, can this be like the nucleus of the nation that will come later on when Moshe brings the blood and they become a nation?
Yes. Yes. But they are a subset of the rest of the Jewish people. Yosef is not the entire Jewish people, but he does have this entity called Beis Yosef, which is a part of the, just like Beis Aaron is a part of the Jewish people, Beis David is a part of the Jewish people, Beis Yosef is also.
But Beis Yosef brings in his brothers.
Correct.
Into that.
Okay. So what you're showing is good.
And that appears to be like the very beginning, the seed
okay.
of the nation.
Okay. Excellent. So what you're pointing out is that whereas Beis Aaron, the house of Aaron, is exclusively Aaron's descendants. If you're not from Aaron, you can't join his descendants. Only his descendants can be Kohanim. Beis David, the house of David, you have to be one of David's descendants to be in the house of David. Even Beis Yisrael and Beis Yaakov, we Jewish people, you have to become Jewish to join our house. You can't join our house if you don't become Jewish. Beis Yosef here seems to bring in his brothers, even though they are not his descendants. They're not converting and becoming his descendants. Somehow Yosef is able to encompass and bring in the rest of the Jewish people, the rest of his brothers. They don't even know it at this point. They don't know who he is. But he has become a bias, a house that envelops the rest of them as well. Which means that no matter which tribe any of us are from, whether we are from the descendants of Yosef, Menashe, and Ephraim, or we are from a different tribe, nevertheless, there is an element of Beis Yosef that includes each and every one of us. Yosef has the capacity of enveloping us all, which also speaks to the point which we made a long time ago, that the Gemara tells us there are only three avos. There are only three patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. After Yaakov, his descendants are now shvatim, tribes. They're no longer patriarchs. They're not avos. Once you get to Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, they each have their own tribe, but they are not avos. They are not patriarchs. Yosef, as we've pointed out before, bridges the gap. In many ways, he is a shevet, a tribe, but in many ways, he also mimics an av, a patriarch, which is why we saw before he was called Avreich. Paro calls him Avreich, which means father, young father. He's got both elements. He's young, which means he's really a child, but he's also av, he's a father. He's got both elements. Yosef doubles as a child of Yaakov and as a father figure for everybody else, for his brothers. Even though he's the 11th of the 12 children.
It's just reminding me of being the head of the diaspora. He's not in Israel.
True. So you're pointing out that this...
He maintains who he is. He raised his children that way. And...
So you're pointing out that...
A lot of us out here, you know, that are still... All the yeshivas that came, you know...
Okay, so you're pointing out that the base Yosef seems to be established not in Israel... Not in a time of geula, of redemption, but rather in a time of exile in Egypt, in a foreign culture. That's where his house gets established.
In my head, it's just kind of paralleling, I guess, where we are.
Okay, good.
What happened to
Babylon? Good.
The descendants of Yosef don't, as far as we know, they don't exist. We don't know where they are.
No, we do.
We know Binyamin and Yehuda.
We know that there are still representatives of all 10 tribes with us. We don't know who's who, and predominantly, as I've spoken about this many times before, predominantly we are Yehuda and Binyamin and Levi, but there are representatives of all the tribes amongst us. Yeah.
So this power of Yosef, is that related to Mashiach ben Yosef?
Yes. As mysterious an idea that is, and we spoke about it in the Yechezkel class on Wednesday nights for women, where the whole battle of Gog and Magog is discussed, and we talked about it then, and we don't know much about it. It's a very mysterious concept, we don't know much about it. But yes, the idea of Mashiach ben Yosef preceding Mashiach ben David is definitely this idea. No question about it. Yeah.
So because we have Yosef, that's why Menashe and Ephraim get a bracha from Yaakov Avinu?
Yeah. We haven't gotten to them yet, but well, now that you bring it up, who is this Ish Al Beis Yosef? Who is this man that is in charge of the house of Yosef? Who is it? So it is Menashe. It is Menashe who is the elder son of Yosef. Yosef has two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. Menashe is the older of the two, and Menashe is the man in charge of Yosef's house. He is young, however, he is he's very strong, powerful, as we've seen already, and we will see again.
But how old is he?
And he can't be more than 9 years old.
Wow.
Because he was born, he was born, it's only 9 years since Yosef got married. So he can't be more than 9 years old. So, now, that obviously is very surprising. However, that's for us. The brothers all demonstrated at a very young age much that we would expect from a much older person. Reuven already demonstrated that when he was young, and all the brothers demonstrated it when they were young. And so, yes, he is young, but it seems that he was capable of running a house.
But this explains why he responded to God, your God, and God of your father.
Well, okay, good. So we have to get to that as well. Now, bear in mind that this is Menashe. When we get to Parshas Vayechi, and we get to the part about Yaakov blessing the brothers but switching his hands, we have to talk about Menashe and Ephraim, what each one's role was. Here we have Menashe being, the Torah doesn't say explicitly that it was Menashe, but the Medrash says it was Menashe. Here we have Menashe in his role as the person in charge of the house of Yosef.
That was Menashe.
Ephraim has not yet been seen in a public way. We know he exists, of course. We know when he was born, but he has not yet been shown to have a position in the house of Yosef. That has not been seen yet.
Well, he's only eight.
Good.
It's also interesting, when you bless a children Friday night, the bracha is that the boy should be like Menashe.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But we'll get to that in Vayechi, because we're going to actually get to the blessing. Yeah.
So, even though he's 9 years old, you know, you would think that the king, the viceroy of Egypt, had a humongous home, castle, or...
Very likely.
You know, not like... You know, a
house with 3 bedrooms. Very likely. Yeah. He's a very capable person, as we will see. I mean, even here...
Granaries, yeah. You know, all kinds of
right.
What the viceroy has.
Right. Over here, he already plays the part very well. Exactly what he's going with Yosef's plan. He seems to be in on Yosef's plan, and he plays his part perfectly. Here as well. Now, the brothers that Yosef tells Menashe to bring the men, bring his brothers to the house, and slaughter the food. How do they translate it here?
Have
the meat slaughtered and prepared. Now the Gemara tells us that what Yosef told Menashe to do was to slaughter the meat in front of the brothers. Because since Yaakov's family kept the Torah, even though the Torah had not yet been given, we know Avraham Avinu kept the Torah, as did all of the Avos and Imos, all the patriarchs and matriarchs, and so did the brothers. And so slaughter the meat in front of them so they can see that it's slaughtered properly. And prepare the meat. What does prepare the meat mean? It means, and remove the gid hanasha, remove the sciatic nerve, which had become prohibited not so long ago, at least as far as the Chumash goes. I mean, in the brothers' lives, it had been a long time ago. But with the battle that Yaakov had with Esav's angel, which was in yesterday's parsha of Vayishlach, in that battle, when he got hurt and in his hip, that nerve, the gid hanasha, became prohibited to the Jewish people, including Yaakov's family, at least according to one opinion. And so, there was a difference of opinion in the Gemara whether it became prohibited right away, or it only became prohibited once the Torah was given later. But according to one opinion, it was prohibited immediately, and therefore he told Menashe, prepare it in front of them so they can see that it's being prepared properly. This, of course, was something that would have raised the brothers' antenna. Yeah, because what's happening here, that the meat is being prepared in a kosher fashion, slaughtered
in front of them,
the nerve being removed, etc.
But also mentioning Hashem's name, the way he gives him the blessing.
Okay, well, that we're going to get to. But the truth is that it wasn't such an incredible thing that it was prepared in front of them, because if you have guests from a foreign country and you want to make them feel at home, you want to be hospitable, then it would make sense that you would ask them about their sensitivities and about their food issues. Today, it would not be strange if you had someone come to your home who was foreign, and if you were going to serve something, it would not be strange to, if you hadn't prepared the food yet, to discuss with them what you're going to be doing, because of the fact that you don't know what their sensitivities are, what their dietary needs are, etc. Even if the person's not foreign, we do that. If a person is vegan, etc., we ask, you know, today it's not unusual for people to have different eating habits and different eating restrictions, etc., health issues. So it's not such a strange thing to be asking the brothers for their input in the preparation of the food. What's going to be really strange, which we haven't gotten to yet, which we won't get to this evening, it will wait until next week, but what's going to be really strange is the very fact that they're eating meat. That really should have raised the brothers' antennas. Because the Egyptians are going to have a strong aversion to meat, because they worshipped the cow and the sheep and the goat. So that we're going to discuss next week, Mitzvah Hashem. So we'll leave that for now, but that would really tip them off. So we need to examine that when we get to it, but that's for next week. However, I want to point out to you that, remember I said that there's more than one reference to Chanukah in Parshas Miketz. We had one which we mentioned last week, and here we have the second one. Look carefully at that, those words in Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the top in the Hebrew side. The words Utvoach Tevach V'Hachein, which means slaughter the meat and prepare it. The last letter of the word Tevach is a Ches. And then the word V'Hachein is Vav Hei Chaf Nun. Those are the five letters rearranged to spell Chanukah. And, as I mentioned, Miketz is almost always read on Chanukah. So here we have the second time in Parshas Miketz that the word Chanukah appears consecutively, with the letters consecutively, in in this parasha. And remember, of course, there are no vowels in the Torah, so it leaps out at you when you look at it on the page. Question is, why is Hanukkah mentioned here? What is the connection between Hanukkah and these words? Prepare the meat, slaughter the meat and prepare it properly.
Yeah, because they wouldn't the traces that they forced upon the sons, the seven sons.
And Hanukkah and her seven sons. Okay, good, good.
Because that there's Mikdash back. At Hanukkah, they were able to slaughter animals again.
Well, they could have slaughtered animals without the Mikdash.
Yeah, it's not the same.
Not the same thing. Okay, okay. She said, with Hanan and her seven sons, the story of Hanan and her seven sons, so he wanted them to bow down to an idol.
But also to the Chadar.
Yeah.
They wouldn't the Chadar.
True. That's true. That's true. Hanukkah, as we've mentioned before, and you know, was really a battle not for the lives of the Jews, like Purim, but rather it was a battle for the soul of the Jews. And it was not a battle primarily between non-Jews and Jews. It was, unfortunately, a civil war between Jews and Jews. It was the Hellenist Jews, the Misyavnim, those who had assimilated into the Greek culture, and they had a different idea of how they thought the Jews should run their lives. And they were against, that was, they were pitted against, the Jews who were committed to Torah. That was the battle. And the Jews who were committed to Torah were greatly outnumbered, and also they were not just outnumbered, but they were weak, because they didn't have the weapons or the resources that the Misyavnim had, because the Misyavnim had the Greeks, the Syrian Greeks, with them. They had the power of that whole kingdom, and they won the war. The war was a war of the Jews who were committed to Torah, not being willing to give in on their standards, and not to allow others to force them to give up what the Torah says to do. They kept Shabbos. They kept Mila, circumcision. They were not willing to give up Rosh Chodesh, etc. All the rules that the Hellenists were trying to destroy, the Maccabees, the Hashmonaim, were not willing to give up. The idea of being in Egypt, in a foreign culture, where everything stood for giving up our rules, giving up what we hold dear, and not following the Torah, and yet the brothers not being willing to eat the non-kosher food, that is a Hanukkah concept. You see, Yosef knew that the brothers wouldn't eat the non-kosher food. Now think about it. You have the brothers who are in Egypt, who are desperate to bring back food for their families, grain for their families. They are going to be granted a personal audience with Yosef, with this person who they don't know who he is, but he's in charge of giving them food. What do you do in that circumstance, and he serves you food? That's a difficult test. That's very difficult. People who are very steadfast with keeping kosher today have the issue of being invited to a dinner, which is a business oriented dinner, or with a client, and it's very difficult. What do you do in those situations? You don't want to lose the client, you don't want to lose your position, but you have to be social. How do you handle that? So most of the time today, you're not forced to eat the food, but do you go into the non-kosher restaurant? Do you not go into the non-kosher restaurant? What do you do in those situations? It's a very difficult thing to handle. To be in a position where the person in charge is inviting you to dinner, and then to refuse to eat the food, that's pretty serious. Yosef knew that it's precisely what the brothers would do. they would refuse to eat the food. He knew that they would refuse to eat the food. He told the man in charge, he didn't just tell him, prepare the food in a kosher manner so the brothers won't be eating non-kosher food. He said, do it in front of them. Because if you don't do it in front of them, they're not going to eat the food. They're not going to believe you that it's kosher. Mm-hmm. They're going to refuse to eat even though they're getting an audience with me who they know has the power to either grant them the grain or not grant them the grain. So this is a Hanukkah concept. The commitment to not give up and not compromise on our standards even in a very difficult situation. That's why Hanukkah, one of the reasons why Hanukkah is hinted to over here.
So I think the way to get around the whole eating food with goyim is Jews should start becoming better golfers. Do this on the field instead of in the restaurant.
Okay, good.
Probably no instructor anymore.
Yeah, you don't know. This message brought to you by PB.
Right, what I'm saying. Yeah.
So what's the word Hanukkah mean in the Hanukkah sense?
That's a good question.
Dedication.
Right, it means dedication because they rededicated the Beis HaMikdash because it had been defiled by the Syrian Greeks and they rededicated it.
So that's what the word means, rededication?
Yeah, to dedicate. That's right. Right.
Could they accept, they did not know that Menashe was Jewish. I mean, they didn't know that he was Jewish.
Correct.
How could they accept, though, that he was doing it properly, even though they were watching
it? They saw him do it.
Yeah, but
okay, now that's a good question.
So they weren't given a
law. They were the only Jews in town, so there was nobody else.
No, but the question that Mrs. Jeter is asking, which is a good question, is that let's say a non-Jew would slaughter an animal properly, would that animal be kosher or not? Right. That is a very good question, and that is debated in the Gemara whether that's good or not good. That is a very good question. So over here in this story, it's going to follow that argument, meaning that if one, according to the opinion that it would be okay for the non-Jew to slaughter it as long as the Jew was watching to make sure that it was appropriately done, then over here, that would be fine. According to the side of the argument that's no good, that the Jew has to slaughter the animal, move the knife, then what the intent over here would be is it to present it to them and have them slaughter. The idea is the same. The idea is be sensitive to their dietary needs. Whatever they say, they need to do for them. Pasuk Yeches, verse 18. The men were afraid, for they were being brought to the house of Yosef. And they said to the man, they said that it's because of the money that this is they're gonna have trumped up charges over here to bring charges crashing down upon us to take us as slaves and our donkeys. So they approached the man that was in charge of the house of Yosef, and they spoke to him at the entrance of the doorway, and they said, Pasuk Chaf, verse 20, Be Adoni, please, my lord, if you please, my lord. Yarod Yaranu Batechila Lishpar Ochel. We came down initially just to buy food. That was all our intention. We had no intention of getting mixed up in any kind of funny business. We were trying to buy food. So we're done. The Medrash says, and Rashi cites it, that when it says Yarod Yaradnu, which is a double language, which means we came down, but it's mentioned twice. We came down in an emphatic way. The Torah is drawing our attention, and they are drawing the attention of the reader and the listener to know that for them this was a yerida. This was being brought down. They were typically in a position where they would feed others, where they would be giving tzedakah and being the ones to provide for others, and now they needed to go seek help from other people. That's Yarod Yaradnu, we have been brought down from where we were. And when we came to the inn and we opened our bags and the money was there exactly in the right weight, we've returned it, we've brought it back, and we brought other money with us to buy the food. We don't know how the money got there. So now, Chafkimel 23. Vayomer, he said, Shalom lachem, peace to you, al tira'u, don't be afraid. Elokeichem, ve'elokei avichem, nasam lachem matmon ba'am tachoseichem, the God of your fathers, gave you a hidden treasure in your sacks. Kasbechem, bo'elo, your money had come to me. Vayotzei alehem es Shimon, and he brought out for them Shimon. Last time we said that we would be focusing here on the brother's perspective of what has been going on this entire time. They came down the first time. They came down the first time with two purposes in mind. One was to get food, and the other was to look for Yosef. Why did they think about getting Yosef? Because it was too much of a coincidence to them that there was a famine in the land, which they knew was for a purpose. This famine was not just happenstance. They knew this famine was for a purpose. And the only place where there was food was Egypt, was Mitzrayim, which happened to be the place where Yosef had been sold. That was too much of a coincidence. Therefore, they understood this famine was a punishment to them. And the way that they would have to do teshuvah is to get Yosef out of Egypt. That was their goal. Their father's goal was just get food. Their goal was get food and find Yosef. Everything went from bad to worse to terrible as they are there in Egypt. First, they can't find Yosef. Then, they are accused of being spies. Then, they are locked up. Then, they are told that you can all go home except for Shimon, but you better bring back Binyamin. If you don't bring back Binyamin, you can forget seeing me. No more food. So they go back up to Canaan without Shimon, without Yosef, the fear of having to bring down Binyamin, and only enough food to last for a short amount of time, and then they're going to have to go back. But they have to bring Binyamin. And then they find the money planted in their sacks, which means that now they can be framed easily as being thieves. So that the deck is stacked completely against them. They are in a terrible, terrible way when they get to Yaakov. And of course, Yaakov reacts that way. Now they finally convinced Yaakov to send Binyamin down. But the deck is still stacked against them. They don't have Shimon. They don't have Yosef. They have this money, which seems to indicate they have sticky fingers. And they have an adversarial relationship with this viceroy, who's got their lives in his hands. The food is in his hands. So they have to overcome a lot of things over here. They have to get Shimon out. They have to protect Binyamin. They have to somehow avoid being accused of being thieves. They have to change this relationship they have with Yosef from being adversarial to being friendly. And they finally have to find Yosef. All of that. So they're apprehensive. And immediately, when they're taken to Yosef's house, they say, this is it. I mean, we are being accused of being thieves. So they approach the man before they enter the house. They don't know what they're going to do. They're certainly not walking in that door before they find out what's going on, because they might have to fight their way out. So before they even enter the house of Yosef, they say, wait, hold on. Let's come clean. We don't know how the money got here. We're not thieves. We never meant to take it. And the man responds, calm down. The money was a gift from your God. It had nothing to do with me. I got your money. That money was a gift from your God, the God of your father. And by the way, here's Shimon. Come into the house and you're invited for dinner. So all of a sudden, three of the five issues, maybe even four of the five issues, have been resolved. They're not thieves. They were given back Shimon. What they thought was an adversarial relationship seems to have melted, right? They're being invited for dinner. Binyamin's life does not seem to be in danger at all. And as soon as Yosef sees Binyamin, he blesses him. Elokim yachnecha b'ni, God should give you favor. So everything seems to be melting away. All their concerns are just melting away.
Scary.
What's that?
But wait.
Yeah, but just wait. Right. It's gonna turn on them. Right. Yosef, again, this is all Yosef's master plan. He knows what's going on in their minds. He's one step ahead of them.
The door, right?
He's several steps ahead of them. But from their perspective, the deck had been stacked against them. And remember, in their minds, who had stacked against the deck against them? Hashem had stacked the deck against them. They don't believe for a minute that it's this viceroy who knows what's going on. How does he know anything? Who is he? Who is this guy? I mean, he doesn't know anything. He's a pawn in Hashem's hands being used to punish them. He is the proverbial staff being used to strike them as a punishment. And then, not only does everything melt away, but this pagan Egyptian in charge of the house says, your God and the God of your father gave you a hidden treasure. Boom! That's like a light bulb going on. It doesn't tell them that this person in charge of Yosef's house must be a descendant of Yaakov. They don't believe that. He's an Egyptian. He's a pagan. Who is this guy? It's God talking through his mouth. God is putting words in his mouth. The man just said, this is a gift from your God. And they see it that way as well. They see, we have done teshuvah. We have actually, we've been doing teshuvah. We've been crying over our sin of selling our brother. We're sorry we did it. And we mean to find him, and everything now is melting away. In the brothers' minds, they are on the road to finding Yosef. That's the last of the five things to happen. We're almost there. We're nearly there. We've gotten our means cleared. We've gotten back Shimon. We have, seems to have, the relationship between us and the viceroy seems to have cleared away, calmed down. Binyamin's life does not seem to be in danger. If anything, he seems to be favored over here. We're about to find Yosef. Yosef must be so close. And little did they know that Yosef was right there in front of them. They didn't know how right they were. But before things get better, they will, of course, get worse. We know that, but they don't know that. They don't know it yet, and this is all, again, this is all part of Yosef's plan. He gives them water, they prepare the gift, and Pasuk Chavav, verse 26, Yosef comes to the house, they bring him the gift, they bow to him, he asks them for peace, how's your father? They said he's good, he's fine. And they bow again, and he says, is this your brother? And they say yes, or he actually doesn't say that, it was a rhetorical question, and he says, God should be gracious to you, my son. And then Yosef has to excuse himself because he can't control himself and he starts to cry. They don't see that, so he excuses himself. He washes his face, he comes back in, and he has them place bread down. Now, I want to jump ahead over here. I'm going to read some verses, I'm going to read some psukim, but we're going to have to come back to it next week. Because I'm not prepared right now to discuss, it's too long of a discussion, to talk about the issue about them eating meat with Yosef and the Egyptians not eating meat. That's something which we'll talk about next week. But before we do that, let's just read, because I want to show you something crucial. Look, let's read a few more verses, a few more psukim, starting with Lamed Beis 32. So he washes his face, he comes out, he says, place bread. Vayasimu lo levado v'lohem levadam. And they gave to him by himself and to them by themselves. And for the Egyptians who were eating with him, they got their own food. For the Egyptians could not eat along with the Ivrim, along with the Jews. It was despicable to the Egyptians to eat what the Jews were eating, because it was their God. The Jews were eating the God of the Egyptians. They sat before him, Abachor Kivchoraso, the older one according to his elderness, Vatsoir Kitziraso, and the young one according to his youth, and the men were astonished. Yosef sat down and he banged on his goblet, and he said, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zevulun, you six are all born from one mother. You sit right here in that order. Oldest to youngest. Boom, boom. Dan Naphtali. Oh, you're from a different mother. You sit over there in that order. God Asher. Boom, boom. Okay, over there. Boom. Binyamin. Oh, you're the only one. Oh, your mother has passed away. My mother's also passed away. Come sit here with me.
That should
Again, it would have been an impossibility for this to be Yosef. But they were astonished how he was able to figure everything out.
The goblet.
This was the goblet, the magic goblet. Right? This is the same goblet that's going to be planted on Binyamin. This is the one they're going to steal. This is the goblet. And he's making the goblet appear to be some magical thing. So they're astonished at what he's doing. And he gave them portions to eat. Binyamin's portion was five times their portion, bigger than their portion. We're going to leave that for next week. But this is why I'm read ahead for the next three words, the last three words on this page. Vayishtu, vayishkiru, imo. They drank and became intoxicated with him. They had a good meal with wine, and they all became intoxicated. It doesn't mean that they were so drunk they didn't know what was going on, but they got loose. They mellowed out. They drank. The Medrash tells us, from the day Yosef was sold until this moment, neither he nor they drank any wine.
Yosef
and the brothers, none of them drank wine from the day he was sold until now. Now we have to discuss that. Why not? If the brothers held that selling Yosef was the proper thing to do, why not drink wine? I can understand if a person feels that they did something wrong, bad, etc., they might be trying to do teshuva, so they won't drink wine as a repentance. But they felt what they did was the right thing to sell Yosef. So why not drink wine? So we can discuss that.
But
they drank wine over here. But they drank wine here. Mm-hmm. Why did they drink wine? They haven't found Yosef yet. Why drink wine?
Because they think the things are moving.
Because they can taste it. They feel they're about to find Yosef. The events are moving forward. Everything is going properly. Our teshuva has been accepted by God. It's just a little bit further, and we've got it. We're almost there. And they were willing to drink. And they were right. Of course, they're going to have a little bit of a bump in the road before they get there. But they are correct. They are about to find Yosef. That's why they were willing to drink over here. We're going to go back. Next week when we begin again, we're going to start from Pasuk Lamed Aleph. He washed his face and came out. We're going to start from there, from 31. That's where we're going to start from next week, because there's a bunch of loose ends here. I didn't mean to actually do these verses in depth yet. But I wanted to get to that point that they drank the wine because they were sure that Yosef was about to be found.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But Joseph didn't drink also for all those years.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Hmm? We'll discuss that next week, Mitzvah. Mm-hmm. Okay.